Tom Harris. I'm interviewing Bobby Thompson at his home in Watchung, New Jersey. Today's date is September 26, 1993. I wanted to briefly ask you, Bobby, I know you were born in Glasgow, Scotland. I wanted to just tell me how many brothers and sisters you had, and what it was like growing up when you got over to the U.S. and how it came about.
You're right, Tom. I was born in Glasgow, Scotland, back in October 25th, 1923. I was the youngest of six children. I have four sisters and a brother. And we came over to this country, I imagine, when I was just between 2 and 2.5 years old. My older brother was 9 years older than I, and looking back at it, I'm sure he was the one that got me started playing with a baseball in the backyard, because he played baseball. And I remember he bought me my first glove. He was working for Sears Roebuck at the time, and he came home with a glove for me, and boy, it was just like Christmas. You know, I was really thrilled to get this brand new glove. So really, that was the beginning of it, getting me out in the sand lots and with the bat and ball and the glove. And of course, my dad, he was used to the soccer, as they call it over there, football. And but he came to this country, and he took to baseball right away. And he was a Dodger fan. He became a Dodger fan. As it turned out, my brother was a Yankee fan, and I took to the Giants. But I guess I started playing, getting out and throwing the ball around when I was 7, 8 years old. You know, when you first pick up a bat and it's too heavy for you. But in around that time is when I started, and then it just went on from there continue to play police athletic league ball, and then as I got into high school and played for the high school team and kind of played what they call semi-pro ball on Staten Island. This was all on Staten Island because that's where we landed when we landed in New York, but we lived in, I was brought up in Staten Island for all my, well, I guess up until, let's see, how old might I have been? I was probably about 32 years old when I finally moved to New Jersey.
You said you were a Giant fan growing up. Did you go see them play in the Paul Grounds when you lived in Staten Island?
Nope. I never did go and watch the Giants play, but I followed them on the radio. And my dad, I remember, he took me to a couple of games over at Ebbets Field. And he was a great Dolph Camilli fan. But he was a typical Scot, not very demonstrative type of person. But I'll always remember when Dolph Camilli hit a home run this day, he jumped up and raised his fists in the air, and I really got a kick out of it. I may as well throw this in for what it's worth at this time. The only thing that was unfortunate, I lost him before I graduated from high school. So as much as he was right there with me at all the ball games and loved to go to ball games, he never did live long enough to see me play in the big leagues, which was, you know, a little bit of a tough one. But as a youngster, on Sundays on Staten Island, there was always a ball game someplace, and he and I would walk for miles. We didn't have a car when we first came over to this country, and we'd walk for miles just to see a ball game. Generally, would be on a Sunday afternoon.
What high school did you go to in Staten Island?
Curtis High School.
After high school, what then?
Well, after high school, the day after I graduated, I signed a contract with the Giants.
That must have been a big thrill, being a Giant fan.
To go to Class D, playing Class D baseball, signed for $100 a month. And, of course, I had been, the Dodgers were very much interested in me. In fact, they showed more interest in me than the Giants did. They knew I I guess I told him I was going to go to the Giants because they asked me not to sign with the Giants before talking to them. They said, we'll top any offer the Giants make. But, I was a young kid back then. Money was no object. I was a Giant, and that was going to be it.
So you went to their Class D club?
I went to their Class D club, and really they had a good ball club, and I was just a scared, nervous kid, and didn't get a chance to play much. Played a few games, but basically I really wasn't playing that much. And Bill Terry happened to be in the front office at the time, so apparently they needed a third baseman at Rocky Mount, North Carolina. So they shipped me out to Rocky Mount, North Carolina, where we thought I'd get a better chance to play. Well, I didn't get a chance. They had a good third baseman there, but he was called into the Army. So then I moved in the third, and I finished out the season. But actually, I probably didn't play in more than 15 to 20 games my first year away, and that was 1942.
What position had you played throughout high school and the other games, or the leagues,
well,
I should say, you were involved in?
Well, I generally played shortstop. That was it. Generally, the better ball players, when kids' teams are playing shortstop, where they can handle the ball more than the other players.
Did you like shortstop?
Oh, sure.
When you tried to play third, how did you feel about making the change to third base at that point?
It didn't matter. We didn't,
You remember the name of the scout that signed you?
George Mack. George Mack actually signed me, but there was a fellow from Staten Island that had a lot to do with my getting into baseball, professional baseball. That was Jim Molinelli, who unfortunately was killed earlier this year in an automobile accident down, he and his wife down in Florida. But it was George Mack, the guy that I guess first saw me playing on a Sunday afternoon when I was playing in the semi-pro league. I was just a high school kid, but they were all older people. But I was, you might say, playing with this. Well, for my age, I guess I was better than the average guy my age.
So you then eventually made it to the Giants. A lot of your career has been documented already. I know you've spoken at length about it with many people. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your move to third base in 51, how it came about, whose idea it was, and how it was presented to you.
I've been playing center field. I started off the season playing second base for Mel Ott, but I think that's the most interesting.
You started at second
part
that year,
of it.
51.
I went to spring training in 1947 to play third base. Now they just had a new rookie, Jack Lorke, they had signed. So Jack Lorke and Sid Gordon, the veteran, the holdover, and myself, and Mel Ott was given each of us an equal chance to play every third day. Well, heck, we were barnstorming back east with the Indians that we did every year, and a week out of New York, where we're going to end up to play a weekend series with the Indians, Mel Ott apparently was dissatisfied with the play of our second baseman, Buddy Blattner, and asked me if I'd try second. Well, heck, of course, I wanted to play ball, and that was that's the toughest position for an inexperienced guy to play. But anyway, I opened up the season there. I missed a double play the first time around, my first opportunity, but I started to feel my way around and felt comfortable at second. But then I was moved to center field because they were having problems in center field, so Mel Ott moved me to center. And I played center, to get to your question, in 1951. I played center field until they brought up Willie Mays. So DeRocher immediately put him in the center field and moved me to third. I was just happy to stay in the lineup and play someplace. So I didn't have a problem with it. I hadn't had the experience there of fielding balls and making the plays, but I was a natural enough ball player that, I remember DeRocher hitting me ground balls, you know, just to try me out there. And, you know, he hit me about 18 or 20 ground balls, and I just jumped around fielding them. And I remember his remark. He says, "Hey, you can't play third any better than that. Don't worry about him. He's all right."
So it was really the arrival of Willie Mays that triggered your move.
Oh, sure.
I believe you batted over 350 after you moved to third for the balance of the season.
Apparently, yes, I heard something like that.
Did you feel like you were hitting well? You must have, but do you think it was a move to third base or coincidental? How well would you call it?
Well, I think DeRocher worked on my stance, and he had me crouching over. In other words, to make me more aggressive. And I was always pretty much a stand-up guy with the plate, you know, without crouching. And so I think that crouching just got me more aggressive and got me into the ball more. And apparently, I had pretty good success with it that year.
What was the mood at spring training in 51? How did you feel? What kind of season did either you or the team in general feel you were going to have?
Well, we thought, our club looked pretty good. We had some very strong, dependable players, strong down the middle. I was able to do a job in center field, and Stanky and Dark were a very experienced double play combination. We had a big, strong guy in left, Monty Irvin, and Whitey Lockman. I guess Whitey, was he in outfield at the time? And Irvin was in first base. I think there were a lot of changes that year. They all seemed to work. We had enough good ball players, and we had some good pitching with Jansen and Magley, among others, Coslow, and we just felt we were strong enough to make a good run for it.
You sure did win in 16 games in a row later on in the season.
Well, of course, we started off. We won the first game and then lost about the next 8 or 9 in a row, but when we finally got it going, yeah, we did get on that winning streak, which made a awfully big difference.
Tell me about the Polo Grounds in your first game there and what it felt like.
Well, of course, when a young guy first steps onto a big league ball field in a big league uniform, you know, it could be any field and you'd be thrilled. But the Polo Grounds belonged to the Giants, and so to me it was a unique ballpark, and it was built more for to play polo or football, really. And so obviously it had short foul lines, but then it stretched out and left and right center and dead center a long way, much further than the average ballparks. But you had to learn how to play those caroms off the outfield walls, both the right and left. But I got there, and to me there was a lot of Giant tradition there, going back to John McGraw's time, and Bill Terry, and I just felt very good and very happy to be there.
You remember your first game well?
Well, see, my first game was the year before 1946. They have brought me, it was my first full year in organized baseball, 1946, because I've been in the Army for 3 years. I made the Jersey City Giant AAA team in 46, and the Giants brought me up the end of that year, the last month of the season. I hit a couple of home runs. I don't really remember my first time at bat for the Giants. I think I read where I hit a home run, but frankly, I don't remember that,
okay,
whether it's true or not. But opening day in 1947, I hit a home run. besides missing a double play ball the second. But we won that game. That's what counts.
Wanted to go ahead and ask you about a couple other things. Celebrated year in 51. A lot of excitement. A couple of years later, you traded to Milwaukee. How did it feel at the time? Did you feel rejection, or did you feel that somebody wanted you? How did it feel, and how were you notified?
Well, you know, I was a every other year player, apparently. You know, I don't know why, which would mean I was inconsistent. So after the 1953 season, you know, I didn't live up to expectations, although I think I recall my statistics a little bit, and today the same statistics is worth $3-4 million.
Easily.
You know, I think I knocked in 106 runs somewhere on that. I just happen to, this has been discussed before, the reason I don't remember all my statistics, but you know, I hit something like 272 and knocked in 26 homers or something like that. But it just wasn't what the Giants were looking for. And so I began hearing through the media, you know, Thompson's days were coming to an end with the Giants, and of course with a young Willie Mays, gonna to look forward to playing center field for the Giants. I guess they had the opportunity, they needed some help in pitching, and they thought, well, I guess I was worth something to other teams in the marketplace, so they made a smart move, and they used me to get a pitcher that which without whom they'd never have won it all the way they did, beating Cleveland in the World Series. Johnny Antonelli had a great year for him, and he made the difference.
How did that feel when you were in Milwaukee playing in 54 and the Giants would win an independent and subsequently win the World Series? Did you feel some anguish? Or?
Well, I guess to get back, maybe I didn't finish your first question properly. So now the Giants go on and win the pennant that year. And sure, it was tough. You know, I look back and traded off the a world championship team. I'd like to have been there, but, you know, I was kind of realistic guy, and that's baseball. You know, I couldn't blame anybody but myself. Now, that last question, were you moving on to Milwaukee now?
Well, I want to know, how were you notified of the trade? How were you told? Did somebody call you?
The Giant trade?
Yeah, when you
yes.
traded to Milwaukee. How were you notified?
I think it was a phone call, and, you know, they were Giants treated me very well, and you know, I couldn't ask any more. In fact, I remember I wrote Leo DeRocher a letter and told him it was a pleasure playing for him, because, you know, I've read stories where Leo and I had our run-ins. Oh, we had our little things off and on the field, but Leo was the kind of guy that, you know, would open up his mouth and shoot right from the hip, and if you had something to say, you know, you're allowed to say it.
Encouraging.
But then it was over the next day. You know, you didn't hold grudges or anything like that. You had something to say, get off your chest. And, well, Leo, Leo was quite a guy to play for.
How was your time in Milwaukee? Did you feel comfortable in Milwaukee? And after being traded, now, this is what I really wanted to understand. When a ball player is traded, you had a home, I assume, in the New York area with the Giants.
I had just been married and was living on Staten Island.
So now you had to go to Milwaukee. What
so
was that
we just
like?
Moved in. Well, I didn't own the home. I was renting it was almost like a honeymoon cottage on Staten Island. Well, what my wife and I did, we put all our stuff in storage and we moved out and we spent a year in Milwaukee. You know, we rented homes out there. So, you know, it was, when I heard the news, Milwaukee, of course, Milwaukee, I felt had a very good team, and they had a big guy named Gene Conley, and I thought, gee, I'm glad I'm on his side, because he was a hard-throwing, you know, basketball player, 6'8", whatever it was, and he had struck me once on the side of my leg, you know, and I thought, you know, he was a guy that threw from the side, and, you know, and you had to hang in there against him, and if he got a little wild inside, well, that's too bad. So I thought, well, I thought I'm glad to be on his side. I went on to Milwaukee, part of baseball, and I disappointed myself there. I never really felt comfortable there. Well, it wasn't until the last year I was there that I just started for the first time. Well, I broke my leg, of course, in the spring training. And
In 54, you broke your leg.
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't play much in 54.
Oh, no. No, and then you come back too soon, and heck, it bothered me through the next season, 55. And when was I traded?
57, during the year they were winning the pennant, traded back to the Giants.
Yeah, and it's funny, and I started off slowly that year, but heck, I just started to find myself, and I don't know if I was hitting the ball well in Philadelphia when I got the news it was traded. And again, the Braves made a good move getting, they needed a second baseman to kind of anchor down their infield, and he was just the man they were looking for. So I might say I helped the Braves win a World Championship too by getting traded.
How did it feel to go back to the Giants then?
The Giant thing was, you know, all the luster had gone out of it, you know, so it was just baseball.
Okay. Wasn't anything special going back to there? She didn't feel rejuvenated or anything?
It wasn't. I lost all that early young person feeling and excitement about playing for the New York Giants. You know, I'd lost that in my dad. I'd grown up and married and baseball had now become a business. It wasn't a plaything like it was when I started.
Then you traded to the Cubs then after that, very quickly.
Yeah, then then they really surprised me, trading me to the Cubs. And that was a bit of a shocker, right? And right in spring training, because I know my wife was looking forward to going out in San Francisco. And I was looking forward to going out to San Francisco too, a change the scenery, certainly. So when I got traded to the Cubs, it was a shocker, but of course, went over to the Cubs and heck, spent two of the most fun years of my life in baseball. For one thing, Al Dark was traded that same year, and the Cubs have been finishing in last place, and that's the part that, you know, didn't sound so hot. But anyway, Al Dark and I went over there, and we felt we contributed pretty well to helping them get into fifth place the following year. And of course, it was day baseball. And playing day baseball and living like a human being, going home and have dinner at night. You know, it was a great thing.
Yeah, it was. So you enjoyed Chicago?
Oh, I enjoyed Chicago very much. The fans were great.
Wrigley Field, did you like that?
Oh, sure. I played center field at Wrigley Field.
A couple of nice years with the Cubs, and then you ended up in 1960 with the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, then I agreed to a contract with the Cubs, and gee, they traded me over the winter for a guy that I've never heard of, so I don't know what went on there. Maybe I signed for too much money that year, but nowadays it wouldn't be anything.
It would be hardly anything. I know it was the last year of your career when you played with the Red Sox in a few games, I believe, with the Baltimore Orioles. Mm-hmm. By the time you got to the Orioles, how did you end up retiring?
Well, the Orioles retired me. I was coming down the end of the line. I didn't look forward. We had just bought a home to New Jersey. We bought a home, had moved to New Jersey. We left Milwaukee after spending 1 year out there. We realized, you know, we were really Easterners and we wanted to get back to this area. And as I say, we just bought this home, and I didn't look forward to leaving for spring training, which is always a bad sign. And so I just went up to Boston, and they could feel the end coming down. And when they got rid of me, obviously I wasn't performing well enough. And then I got to Baltimore, and that didn't work out. So
they released you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What did you do after that? Did you go home and work on your new career? Or
came home and sat down and had a talk with my wife about where do we think we ought to go from here. And she said, you know, Bob, it's been baseball all our lives. That's all we've talked about and worked at. And why don't we find out what else is going on in the world? And that's what I wanted to do. And I went out and looked for a job. Well, first of all, I had only had a high school education. So I went to Stevens Institute and took a lot of aptitude tests. And they pointed out sales. And that's what I've been doing. And I went out and looked for a job. And I interviewed a lot of different companies and had a lot of interesting experiences. people I've met, presidents of companies, and had quite a few job offers, but I finally settled down in the paper business, and that was it.
You had no offers to stay in the game, coaching or
no,
otherwise,
and
you didn't want any?
I didn't have any feeling to stay in baseball.
You figured you were finished?
Yes.
Did you have any offers?
No.
Nobody offered a coaching job?
I was offered to play out in the Coast League. And
PCL?
Offered,
Coast League?
Yep, and I was offered to, I had an offer from Japan to go over and play at Japan, but as my wife and I talked about it, of course she was ready, she liked to travel and try out Japan, but I thought we're just putting off the inevitable, so I never really considered it.
Okay, I wanted to ask you a couple other different things. Favorite ballparks you played in? Can you give me a couple of your favorite ballparks?
Chicago, I enjoyed playing in Philadelphia. I had some success there.
Connie Mack Stadium?
Yes. But other than that, there weren't any particularly great parks that I look forward to playing in.
Some hitters seem to do well in certain parks,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't have.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to tell you which park I did best in, but I enjoyed going to Chicago and playing at Wrigley Field, especially on weekends.
Is there one player you could say, or point to, that you learned the most from?
Player?
A teammate or an opponent or what
have
you?
Well, when I played for the Giants, of course, back in the days before we were flying around the country, we had people like Dart and Stanky and Larry Jansen and Whitey Lockman. And we sit around and we talk baseball. And so I would say those fellows had as much an effect on me as anybody.
Is there a pitcher you recall having the hardest time? You mentioned Gene Conley. Anybody else you had a real tough time against that you can recall?
Well, Yul Blackwell, I've always said, was the toughest pitcher. Drysdale, later years, he was tough, but Yul Blackwell, he had a a snake-like delivery. And
sidearm almost,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. And his ball moved. And, he had a wicked sinker and then a good change-up curveball. And so he's tough. Well, a whole bunch of them were tough.
Okay, I want to ask you about a few people you played with.
Mm-hmm.
Come up with the Giants, Mel Ott was the manager. Can you tell me what kind of a man Mel Ott was how he was as a manager?
Mel Ott was my guy. He was a gentleman, he wasn't a tough manager like DeRocher, but he was just a ball player that I rooted for, and kind of my idol type of guy, and that was it. He was Mr. Giant.
You must have heard much about him growing up.
Oh, sure.
You also played with Johnny Mize, was at first,
yep,
I believe,
Big
when you come
John,
up.
Big John, he could sit, and he had great eyes, could take a ball an inch off the plate, and for ball four, whereas me, I'd have to swing at it, or they would have to call me out, but John, was a great hitter and had a great eye for the baseball and for the strike zone. And of course he could pump those home runs out.
Yeah,
there
51
too.
In his late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
You also played, I believe when you first came up with Ernie Lombardi was on the Giants. Do you recall much about Ernie Lombardi?
Yep, Ernie, well, not a whole lot, but Ernie used to sit on the bench and his catcher's glove, it looked like a big pancake. He'd roll it up and he'd sit on the, he was just pinch hitting then, and he'd just sit on the bench with that under his arm, and his shoes were always untied, and sometimes he had them off, I guess, and I used to watch Mel Ott when he's looking for a pinch hitter come down the bench, and all he would say is, "Hey, Lom," that's all, he'd just nod at him and say, "Hey, Lom." He didn't have to say anything else. Lom knew he was a pinch hitter, but he always just very relaxed. He'd bend over, tie his shoelaces, and go over the bat rack and pull a bat out and just back it up to the home plate. He wouldn't even swing it sometimes, like a lot of guys want to do to get loosened up.
You just walk up there and...
Oh, yeah, he's just a very unusual guy.
Monty Irvin was the first black player in the Giants, I believe.
Yeah, Monty Irvin.
Do you recall him coming up
Hank
to the Giants? And
yeah,
what it was like
Hank,
for him?
He and Hank Thompson. Oh, I don't remember anything unusual. The only thing I do remember about Monty and Hank, I remember we took a train out to Chicago this one time, and we got to Chicago and got off the train, and we all got on a bus, and Monty and Hank Thompson got in a cab and went to wherever they stayed. And I know that I thought to you that wasn't right. And I talked to some of the guys about it. Oh, they're playing on our ball club. They ought to be able to stay with us. But that changed.
It changed shortly
that
after.
Yeah.
So this was in Chicago. They had to stay at a separate hotel.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Well, I remember the. Yeah, the one. I just remember that one trip.
This was what, 48?
That'd be, it's probably 48.
Irvin was a real good ball player and really helped the 51 team.
Oh, yeah, and he was, I respected him as much as anybody on the ball team.
You also played with Billy Rigney?
Yeah.
And he was a manager for a while, too.
Bill
Rigney,
well, he became a manager
right.
After a while. He was another DeRocher man. He was a utility player and a good one, a good hitter and a great utility player. And he was a student of the game. And obviously, he learned a lot from DeRocher because he became a manager for a good number of years himself, but I'd say very successful man in baseball.
Whitey Lockman, you mentioned before.
Oh, yeah.
What type of a guy was Whitey Lockman?
Whitey was a very low-key guy. I remember him most as a first baseman. He was an outfielder, and of course, a good outfielder, could run and get the ball, but he broke his leg in spring training, and I don't think that leg ever I think he lost some of his speed, but he could still run above average. But as a first baseman, he was great. He was overshadowed in New York by Gil Hodges, but Whitey was as good of a glove man as any of them, and he hit the ball.
You also played with Eddie Stanky. You mentioned him before.
Yeah.
What type of a guy was Eddie Stanky?
Brat. The Brat was a great guy to have on your ball club. You know, if you played with him, of course, if you played against him, you hated him. And he was that type of guy, you know, and he was a cocky guy, and he was into the game. And I know when I was playing center field, when the pitcher, say, would get two strikes on the batter, he'd turn around and stand there like a general with his arms folded and just stare at me to see what I was going to do. Well, naturally, on our team, if Jansen was pitching and he got two strikes on a hitter, well, we knew we'd know what he was going to do to certain hitters, and so obviously he'd move around. So basically what I'm saying, I didn't need Stanky to turn around and wonder if I'm going to change, move around, because Freddie Fitzsimmons used to have a saying about move around, you're killing the grass. You know, these guys, these pitchers who weren't running around enough. And so I'd holler back at him a few choice words, you know, you play second base, I'll take care of center field. But that's the kind of team we had. There were guys that we just didn't show up to put our suits on. You know, we're out there to win, and you know, we had little things like that go on.
How about Sal LaBarba, Sal Magna?
Oh, the Barber. He, you know, the media painted him to be such a mean guy, and of course he had a heavy beard, but he was a very easygoing guy, and he used to laugh, you know, at the reputation the media gave him. But of course, he was a tough pitcher, you know, and he did come inside on hitters, but he wasn't any kind of a mean guy at all.
We talked about Willie Mays before.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily, your move to third in 51 was triggered by his arrival.
Mm-hmm.
Was he immediately recognized as a great talent by everyone on the team? Well, I know he struggled early.
Yeah, I would imagine we felt he was a great talent because he did the job in the field right away. I mean, he made some great plays. But he struggled at bat. But Leo kept him in there, you know, and he wasn't Willie Mays with the bat that year. It took him, you know, a little while before the real Willie Mays showed up with the bat. It didn't take very long, but that year, he wasn't.
He was rookie of the year, eventually.
Yeah, uh-huh.
What type of a guy was Willie to play with?
Oh, he just a young kid that loved to play baseball. The good Lord put him on earth to play baseball, and he was just like a little kid, you know, and an innocent little kid that just loved every minute he was on the ball field.
Okay, let's talk about Leo. You said the perception is that you and Leo didn't get along. You're saying it was just the usual back and forth between ballplayer and manager that occurs in the course of a career or a game?
Well, I'm not saying there was a general perception, but there were a few articles off and on, you know, at any given time, and that didn't mean anything. There was any kind of serious thing between us, but Leo was that kind of manager. If he had something to say, he wouldn't hold back. I liked playing for Leo because he played well. As long as you were out there hustling, giving 110%, you know, making an error had nothing to do with it. You know, and so really, I don't remember what it was that he got teed off after for. But I think it might have been Cincinnati. I'd been sick all night long. And the next day I showed up on a Sunday morning. I don't know whether I just had a virus or something, but whatever it was, I really felt terrible. And it was a hot day in Cincinnati, and I was playing center field, and I didn't get a ball, catch a ball that he thought I should have caught. And I think he jumped on me for that, and I forget what I said or something. You know, I did the best I could, or whatever it was, I don't know, but that was, I think that was what it was all about. I mean, I didn't, you know, back then we didn't get out of a ball game because something was wrong with us, and we probably never knew that. I was in terrible shape, but I agree with him that I probably should have had the ball, but the effort I put out wasn't the usual effort. But little, you know, some little thing like that. So really, it wasn't much more than that. So he and I, as I said, I wrote a letter to him. I wouldn't have written a letter to him if I didn't feel the way I did about him.
How did Leo become the manager? I know he came from the Dodgers, but what happened with Mel Ott? How did he end his tenure as manager with the Giants?
Well, Mel Ott, well, we weren't a winning team. And Mel Ott wasn't a guy to, you know, run a tight ship. He was just a nice guy, a great ball player. And given the ball players that could go out there and do the job, because, you know, he let them go out and do his thing, do their thing, just like he did. He didn't, you know, nobody had to manage him. He just went out and hustled and played his game of baseball. So we needed, I guess they felt we needed someone to shake us up, you know, somebody with a little more clout. And of course, DeRocher had a lot of clout.
Let me ask you about a few guys from Milwaukee, just a couple. Warren Spahn, you played with at Milwaukee.
Oh, Spahn, he was great. He was great, not only a great pitcher, he could hit, he could feel, so he helped himself win a lot of ball games.
Eddie Matthews was playing for the Braves.
Oh, yeah, Eddie was strong and could swing, had a good swing and could really rip that ball. And he was just very strong. Showed up every day, you know, not say a whole lot. Around the clubhouse, just went out there and played ball. Tough man and a great club man.
Yeah, and Hank Aaron was another.
Well, Hank, yeah, was
not much you can say. How was he back in those days? How was he?
He's a young kid. Showed up like Willie to play. He wasn't as excitable as Willie. You know, he's quieter and low. Low key, you wouldn't hear him in the clubhouse. Willie had that high pitched voice, and you know, guys would kid him, and you know, you'd hear him yakking away, but Hank was a low key guy. He just went out and swung the bat.
In Chicago, you played with Ernie Banks too. He was a great ball player. He was a shortstop at the time.
Yeah, Ernie always thought hit more 3-run homers than anybody I'd ever played with, and do the job at shortstop and do the job at bat, and just a very easygoing guy. He used to kid me every day I walked in the park. You know, he'd always say, "Let me see, are you the Thompson with the P or without the P?" You know, I'm just talking about Hank Thompson and that club. Can you hold on a minute?
Sure. About several players, managers, and so on in your career. 1951 has been well documented, talked about, replayed, etc. I wonder if you remember how the playoff format was decided and what the feeling was in the club at that time. You had such a phenomenal end of season. How was the 3-game playoff format decided?
Well, the powers that be in baseball, I guess, had decided that there's going to be a 3-game playoff. I guess there were times previously when
there was a one-game playoff.
So, as I say, it had already been decided by the powers that be.
Had been decided long before the end of the season.
I guess
a month or so, right?
I would assume so.
Yeah, they usually have a coin flip nowadays.
I would assume so.
Let me just ask you, a lot of people don't know you hit a home run the first game. Tell me about the first game, if you can.
Well, of course, you know, I thought we'd won the pennant on Sunday up in Boston, because we beat the Braves and the Dodgers. We were playing down in Philly, and they, you know, and they were losing. So he was. They ended up winning. That meant we were going to have to play the Dodgers in a three-game playoff, and I didn't like the sound of that at all. Because, you know, we feared them, we respected them, but going into that first game, we were losing 1-0, and I got up and hit a home run with a man on, put us ahead 2-1. Bonnie Irvin later hit another home run, so it was 3-1. But you know, you get out there, you're nervous at first, but once the game starts, you're totally determined and you're doing your best, and that's all you can do.
This was at Ebbets Field.
This was at Ebbets Field. Yeah. Yeah, the home run. It wouldn't have been a home run in Bowling
Grounds. Bowling Grounds, no way, right?
No.
Unless you had gotten it down the line.
Well, I hit it over the 360 mark, whatever, and you know, maybe hit the ball 380 feet, and it was an easy out for Bowling Grounds.
Okay. Second game was.
We moved to Polo Grounds, and of course, now we're one game up on them, and so we felt pretty good about ourselves.
Sure.
Except Clem LeBlanc shut us out,
right.
And he was just unhittable, and 10-0, and that was a terrible feeling.
That's what I was going to ask. It must have been very discouraging.
To get beat that badly, because, hey, look, the Dodgers, Dodgers had a great team from top to bottom. You know, they were better than our team. Better than our team in that golden decade of the 50s. But anyway, now we're getting into the final game.
Well, I'm going to turn the tape over and we'll continue. Okay, now we're in the final game.